and anybody else who comes, will come and take it from there.
Well, thank you very much for all of you to come after all the preparation that Mike and I did. So we're very thankful also to Kevin, who allowed us or approved that Sue Peters will speak and be approved by PAF. I make this very short. Sue Peters will speak herself a little more about herself, but very quickly. Sue has been a computer technologist for over 30 years. She worked Wall Street corporations, One Bank, Citibank, and other big banks. So she knows multinational commercial banks inside out, and I maybe put it that way, she knows their dirty
level
secrets.
I'm not sure all that is true.
Okay, I'll exaggerate a little bit. She can dump me down. But the dirty little secret about money that from our previous conversation,
big secret.
Big secret, and rather dirty. And with dirty, I mean the ones that we all suffer from this debt-driven and underpinned economy. And I hand it over to Sue, and she will now enlighten us on things that are really not common knowledge. Also, they should be.
Thank you.
Welcome, Sue.
Everybody for being here. I'm really glad to be here. I just wonder if the audience would do me two favors. One is just to move up more.
A row or two?
It's just from the speaker's point of view, sort of feels nicer to have it more in a group, you know, which would help be very helpful. Thank you. And then before I tell you a little bit about myself, I just wanted to hear anyone who is willing to just say a few words about why you were interested in coming to a talk about money. Anyone who
free samples? Or?
Oh, that was a good one. Free samples. I love that.
Oh, I left mine home.
For me, I think it's important because, being a union representative, I know that we're going to be fighting for a new contract. So if we have some good information to go to the table with as a negotiating team, or at least bring this information back to the negotiating team, it might help us get a better contract.
I hope that happens. I'm not sure this information would be heard very well by the other side, but informing yourself and the other people, the education of that, to me, is critical.
Right.
Okay. I'm hoping that what I tell you, at least for me, it has been totally self-empowering of myself in the world. Because when I learned about the money system, then I understood why the world was the way it was today. Before that,
Hi.
Before that, I was very miserable. There's so many problems in the world. I mean, how is this world ever going to be fixed? But when you learn about the money, you learn why the world is the way it is. And I say that, I'm just going to say one other thing, then introduce myself. Because what you have to keep in your mind is that you cannot have a society unless you have money. You just can't. You go back to Babylonia, they had money, because for people to live together in a society, you have to have a means of exchange so people can get a roof over their head and food. That's the bottom line. There has to be money. So whenever you look at a country or a historical period or whatever, the first thing you have to say is, what was the money and who controls it? Because who controls the money controls that society. It's just basic to people living together in a society. So let me just say, I come from IT. I live in New York. I was born in New York and lived there all my life. And I, along the route of my life, I got into becoming a computer programmer and then an analyst. And I ended up being what's called an application system designer. So what I would do is, and because my career was in New York, I worked for the large corporations down on Wall Street, mostly brokerage. And I would go in, and you live with the data, and then you see the relationships of the data, and then you design a system. It's a very creative process. I really loved doing it for that reason, the creativity of it. Then in the year 2000, I needed a job, and I got a job for the first time working for a bank, Citibank. I knew nothing about banks. I had worked mostly for brokerage firms. So I go into the job, and I'm looking at the data files, and I'm saying to myself, why is it that there's only debits and credits in this business? What is this? It's just debits and credits. I was used to stocks and bonds and mortgage-backed securities and this and that. So, and I'm the kind of person that whenever I had a job, I always wanted to know more. You know, I just didn't want to do my job, and I wanted to know, well, what's the business about? Why are they doing this? And that got me into what does a bank really do? And then various other threads in my life all came together, and I discovered what I'm going to show you tonight. And what I do now is I go and talk to, you know, publicly to groups, but I do a lot of reading on my own. A lot of this information, because the people who control the money in our society don't want us to know anything about it, because, and I'm a system person, because their system is running very smoothly, and if we knew what their system was, we would definitely want to change it. The world we're living in isn't helping us, right? So they're invested, and you're not knowing this information, so they can keep doing what they've been doing for many, many years. This is not a new problem, the control of money by private interests. That's what we have in this country today. Our money is not under the control of us, the public, okay? I'm going to show you some slides. I gave a talk yesterday at the Northeast Organic Farmers Association. They're very interested in this topic, of course, because farmers themselves are totally dependent on money, like everybody. But I'm not going to show you the whole thing, because theirs was an hour and a half, and we only have an hour. So I'm going to show you the first half, and then we'll have a question and answer, okay? And so I'm going to do this.
Hit enter.
Hit enter, okay.
There you go.
Okay, so we're going to do these. What is money? The most important thing is for everybody in the room to understand what money is. We're not taught about it. Even in economics classes, they don't teach about money. Economics classes, they could, you know, about, you know, charts and mathematics and everything. But economists really are defenders of the current system. They're really not going to tell you this information. And a lot of them don't know it. You know, probably most of them. Okay. And then I'm going to say, where does our money come from? Get a little bit into the mechanics, okay, but the core of it. And then what are the effects, which all of us are feeling, right? And then at the end, we'll skip down here, we'll pass the Farmers Alliance, because that's what I talked about with the farmers, which in itself is an incredible movement, mass national movement of farmers in the 1880s that ended up becoming political. At the end of the 80s, they became political, created the People's Party nationwide, and became the Populist Party that we read about in our history books. So they don't tell you really about the alliance and the farmers part of it. Okay? And then, so what needs to be done today for a more just money system? Okay? So that's what we're going to do. So what is money? Okay. If you don't have money, you die. Think about it. If you can't pay your rent, you can't go into a store and buy food, you'll die. You know, unless, you know, you have a kind relative who says, well, I'll take care of you. So because of this power that money has in any society, this is true of any society, because of that immense power, you have to say to yourself, money is very unique. You know, the economists would say, well, money is capital and it goes into the production process, as if it's like everything else that to create wealth. It's not. It's not. If you don't have money, you can't have a society. It's not capital. It's a unique item that is really the means of exchange for creating wealth in the society. Okay, so the economy can't work unless you have this means of exchange. Okay, so that's why it's very unique. You really have to think of it as different from wealth around you. Okay, it's indispensable, essential. And it's a human invention. That's the other thing. You have to think about it. People wanted to live together, and they created, you know, the Babylonians were the first real civilization back then. In order to have that civilization, they had to figure out what the money was going to be. And the king and the temple figured it out. Okay? So they controlled it. And through most of history, it's only really up to the 17th century, through all of that history, money was under the control of the sovereign government, whatever the sovereign government was, right? In the Middle Ages, the kings of England. Queen Elizabeth, the first day she got her crown, she called her Privy Council together. The first thing she said to them was, "Tell me, what's the condition of my coin, the coin of the realm?" And it's always, up until the 17th century, it's always been under the control of the sovereign authority, whatever that is. You know, the king back, you had the Greek city-states, right? So whoever ruled the city-states, they knew. And the other thing about it is when, you know, these rulers, they knew how money worked. I mean, because that was what was going to keep them in power, right? The kings of England, they knew that if they didn't control their currency and they let that price go out of control, that they weren't going to be kings very long, you know? So they were very clear on how much money was out there circulating, right? The money they issued under their authority. And all through the early Middle Ages, the rulers in Europe were not allowed to issue coin. It had to be issued through Byzantium. When the church broke up and you had the two Roman empires and you had the Dark Ages in Europe, but you had the other empire in Constantinople, Byzantium. They controlled the currency in the early Middle Ages. And if anyone dared to issue money that other than from Byzantium, they took their armies and they went right after them, because the money controls the society. That's how the power it has. Okay? So, I don't know if you can see this very clearly, but we talk about money also from how it functions in the society. Of course, it's, like I said, a means of exchange, right? You need food, you need to, you know, pay rent, okay? A store of stable value, okay? This is critical, okay? If I make $100 today, I work and I make $100 and I put it in my checking account, and with that $100, I can buy a certain amount of food today. Well, in 10 years, when I take it out of my checking account, I want to at least know I can buy the same amount of food, right? I have stored the value of my labor in that money. course, we have inflation. We've had inflation since the birth, it's not even the birth, it's the passage of the Federal Reserve Law in 1913. And we've had inflation up to the current. We're still having inflation. So our money is not a very good store of value, right, for that reason. What you could buy, let me see if I get it straight. In 1913, when the privately owned Federal Reserve banks, when that system was created, you could spend a dollar, and today that same dollar would buy 3 cents. It's lost all that value. So you begin to say, well, our money system isn't doing its job. It isn't, okay? Now, how do you keep the price stable? Like I was saying, the kings of England, they were very clear they had to keep their price stable, right? So the people of the realm would stay happy. Because if that price started to inflate, the people wouldn't be able to even live, right? And he wouldn't be king for very long. So today, even today, we say, how do you keep the stable value? And the way that it works with money, which is the means of exchange circulating in the economy of the society, is you have to control the volume. Okay? So if I have I have 10 watermelon here, and I have a certain volume of money, that it determines what price the watermelon is going to be. If I increase the money supply, so now I have 10 times the amount of money circulating, those prices are going to get higher, okay? Because I have the same amount of watermelon. Yes?
I just have a, I'm just trying to relate what you're saying to what I read and whatnot. So when money is too loose, is that when governments contract the money supply?
Well, in our country, it's not the government, it's the private banks that contract the money supply.
So it's not the Federal Reserve. I'm thinking of like in Tokyo or Japan.
Okay.
They were having, when the yen was dropping against the value of the dollar because there was too much yen out there, they contracted it by pulling some of the money back.
You know what? Can I talk to you about this after?
Oh, sure.
You're
sure.
Talking about the relationship of two different currencies, and I just want to stay.
No, but is there a relation between the value in keeping money stable and what a government does in terms of contracting or give you an example. In this country, when we went through the recession, the government thought about giving money to the states for them to do public works projects. To put money back into society.
Let's hold your question.
Okay.
We'll get to the source of money. We'll get to the source of money, and then you'll see. Because what people hear in the mainstream media is totally confusing, and it's meant to be confusing, because I'll say it again, the powers that run this system do not want the ordinary Americans to know how it runs. It's not a complicated system, but they make it so complicated that most Americans walk away and say, I can't understand economics, I don't understand what's going on, and give up. But they want that. They plan for that.
It sounds like you were getting ready to talk about supply and demand.
In money.
Right. That's the term that we use, right? When
right.
You want to control volume,
yes.
How much goods are out there, to adjust the money, it's supply and demand.
Right. So if you increase the supply of the money and you have the same number of goods,
right.
Then the prices of those commodities will go up. And if you reduce the money in circulation, because the people who control the money system can do that, then you have deflation, or you have the prices of commodities going down, but you also at the same time have the fact that businesses can't make profits, and therefore they lay people off, and then you have a deflationary depression, and we don't want that. That's worse than inflation, right? Okay. And then you have, it's a measure of value, meaning it's denominated. So our money, our cash money, has a $1 bill, a $10 bill, a $20 bill. It's written on it. It's denominated by the authority, right, by the government. But let me just say right now, to prepare you, most of our money is not cash and currency. Very little, like 3%. Very, very little. The majority of our money is accounting money in checking accounts. 97% of the money supply of the United States is found in checking accounts. All of our checking accounts, the government's checking accounts, corporations' checking accounts, in private commercial banks, part of the Federal Reserve System. That's our money. And it's hard for people to grasp that, because in the media, when they say money, you see, they usually have pictures of rows of dollar bills being printed on machines. Mm-hmm. They want you to think that's the money. And historically, even the Farmers Alliance, they knew a lot about the money system, but they didn't know really about the accounting money, because it's not, you know, you can't hold on to it. You know, it's in the ledger of the bank, you know. And how many people can look at a ledger of a bank and know what it means, right? But that's money. In our society, think of how you pay. You pay by check, you pay by debit card, right? You pay, you give authorization to have automatic payments taken out of your checking account. 97% of our economic payments are going through checking accounts, which are accounting money, which is not something you hold in your hand. You get your accounting, your statement every month, and that's your money in the bank, right? You think. Legally it's not, but you think it is. And that is our money today. It's a very hard thing to grasp, because they keep throwing these images, you know, of coins and dollar bills at you. Okay. And it's a means of payment, money, right? We all have to pay for things, right? Our rent, our kids' education, we all got to write those checks and pay. Very important function. You know, all of those payments every day through the Federal Reserve payment system, trillions of dollars. When I was working for Citibank, by the time I left, one of the things that was worrisome to the people that I worked with was the fact that we had built this system, and it had been built before I started working for them, starting in the 80s. So it was, you know, it's sort of an oldish system. And the money supply was increasing, right? Think of it. Remember the bubble? We had the bubble, the mortgage-backed bubble? The money supply was increasing. And
Didn't Citibank have something to do with that?
Of course.
Okay.
They got bailed out, didn't they?
Yeah.
And we got worried that the amounts were getting bigger and bigger that were going, and at the end, the system I worked on was the checking accounts of Citibank's North American corporations. So it was a lot of money of these big corporations. So right before I left, it got to the point where in one night, just through Citibank, you know, there's many other large...
Oh, no, there was many others, but yeah. I mean, there's Bank of America, there's one that even went out of...
Goldman Sachs, I always love to mention Goldman Sachs.
Countrywide Mortgage, and I think...
Well, that's not a commercial bank. But
no, but they were part of that,
yeah.
Too.
In one night, through our system, $1 trillion of credits and another $1 trillion of debits were posted to our customer accounts. That's how much money is sloshing around through the payment system. So it's a very critical function to have that payment system work every night, you know, keep the economy going. And it's all accounting money. It's all in the files, you know. Okay, so what money is not? Money is not a commodity. Money is not gold, silver, whatever. In the past, some societies, you know, have used fish, you know, for money. It's not a commodity. And
if it's not a commodity, how can they have currency exchanges?
Well, the currency is used as money, right? And it's accounting money that they're dealing with.
But don't they treat it like a commodity? you know, whatever trading, you know what I mean? Well, dollars for euros, et cetera.
You can decide that you want to invest, say, in gold, right? That's, to you, that's a commodity. That's your investment. But it's not legal money used in the money supply. It's not money issued by the authority.
It's not currency.
Commodity has a use value.
Currency. Currency is usually paper dollars and coins, right?
Not necessarily, because you have, in the computer system today, you have a lot of transfer of money, but you don't actually see money. It's,
right.
It's like
that's
paper transactions.
Money. That's accounting money. That's the 97% of all our money. But when people say currency, they're really talking about cash, that term.
Currency or, not necessarily, I don't necessarily think so. I think you start talking about currency, it can be more than just money.
Okay, hold on. We have to define our terms. It's very important.
Okay.
So for the purposes of understanding what I'm trying to say,
okay,
currency or cash, to me, I'm going to be using it as, that's the coins in your pocket or the dollar bills in your pocket. The 3% of all the money our society uses, okay? The rest of it is accounting money.
Okay.
In the ledgers of private commercial banks, okay?
Or corporations, and
no,
or
corporations. No, banks. Banks are corporations. Private banks are corporately chartered. You know, they're private. But they're commercial banks. Okay.
So
and money is not debt.
Okay. So some of that money is held by brokerage firms, though, because we've invested. So are you saying banks and brokerage firms for the 97%?
No, just banks. If I have an account at a brokerage firm, I can take my money out of my bank, give it to the brokerage firm to buy something, right? The brokerage firm is going to take the money and put it in their account in a bank.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little tricky. You have to stay clear. We're talking in this talk the money supply, the actual money in commercial banks, not what people will invest it in. That's a whole other thing. Okay? Okay. And money is not debt. I'm going to say that because the next thing I show you will be very confusing. Money is something that gets issued by an authority and circulates, creating commerce. People get their needs met, right? That unique, very indispensable. And then it'll circulate until maybe someone puts it in, you know, in their checking account and leaves it there, or it'll circulate and someone pays their taxes and it comes back to the government or something like that, right? But it doesn't disappear. It just keeps circulating and will stay somewhere for a while and go around, okay? Very important concept, as you'll see. Okay. So that's what money is not. It's not debt, okay? It's actual money circulating, existing, and it's not a commodity, okay? And I love this man, Edward Kellogg, 1861. He grew up on a farm in New York State, and he came into the city, and he learned merchandising, and he had a little merchandising shop business down on Pearl Street in New York, and it got bigger, and he got more successful, and in 1937, there was a depression, and he lost everything. And he was a very religious man, very moral, and he looked around, and he said, he saw other people who had also been bankrupted, and he said, he's a self-educated man. I love the books I get written by self-educated people. And he looked around and he said, why did this happen? And he put the finger, just like Occupy did, he said, I think it has to do with the money, right? Occupy said, the banks, pointed to the banks, the first thing Occupy did. So he studied it, and he wrote a book called The New Monetary System, and in it, he went through interest on money, and he went through 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, all the way up to 10%, and he went through all, you know, the scenarios, and he came to the conclusion that there really was no percentage of interest that would not concentrate wealth in a country. He said maybe 1% within the lifetime of an individual might not concentrate the wealth that badly. But anything above 1%, interest is concentrating the wealth, right? It's taking a wealth away from the productive sector
giving it to the money lenders, right? You charge the interest.
So keep that in mind about interest. And I love, he was just a wonderful person. And one of the quotes was, "The most important fundamental law in any nation is that which institutes money. For money governs the distribution of property and thus affects in a thousand ways the relations of man to man." And I think, to me, that says a lot, you know. Because it's so true. So where does our money come from? Here's the key here. We have privately issued money. The media will keep saying the government is printing money. Well, first of all, the idea of printing is wrong. It's all accounting money. It's not printed at the government printing office. It's not, that's minuscule amount of the money that we're all using. This thing goes forward. This was happening yesterday. I don't know what it is. It must be my slideshow. Okay. Private commercial banks create something called bank credit, which functions as money, but is not money. But it functions as money, okay? It's debt. Okay, is there some way to hold this here so it doesn't go forward?
I think if you have a pro...
Should I turn it like this? Would that help?
I think it depends on if you have it programmed into your PowerPoint to automatically
forward. I had no idea. Okay. So at this point, I wanted to ask for a volunteer to come up and do a little skit with me.
Okay. Now, if I get hurt or anything, I'm going to cry.
You can sue me.
No, I won't.
Okay. So... You want to start a business, and you have to borrow some money, and you're coming to your banker. I'm your banker.
Okay.
How much money, what's your name?
Diane,
how much money do you need?
Well, knowing me, I figure I need about $2-3 million.
Well, that's a little too much. How about $100,000?
No, but you see, that might get the business started, but how am I going to live thereafter?
That's okay. I'm going to give you a loan for $100,000.
Okay, only $100,000. Okay.
Sign right here that this is legal. Our money system is totally legal. You have to sign right there.
Okay. Okay, there we go.
Okay. Now, I'm going to type into the computer $100,000. Yes. Now, look in your checking account. And is it in your checking account?
Yes, it is.
Okay. No, it's not all there. She took a fee.
She probably did, knowing the bank.
I'm very happy with just getting her signature on this loan agreement. because of course, what you buy with this in your business is collateral for the loan.
Yes.
If you don't pay, I get
we take the
equipment.
Business.
I think.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That's it.
Okay. It seems so simple, right? Well, what just happened?
Well, actually, what happened is
okay. What just happened was a borrower came into a private corporation, private commercial bank, and the bank gave that borrower a loan after the loan agreement was signed. There is now $100,000 of new money, I'll put that in quotes, I like to call it bank credit, in her checking account. And what did I say? 97% of the money that we use is accounting money in checking accounts. I have just increased the money supply by $100,000. I did not go over to my depositors and borrow that money, give them a little bit of interest, and give that to her. No, they do not want you to know. They don't do that. It's not the accounting. Every time someone borrows from a private corporation, a private commercial bank, the bank is creating new money. Bank credit. I like to call it bank credit because I'll explain.
That's what it is.
I'll explain how bank credit works. Okay? Okay, so this $100,000 is out there. And is it Louise?
Diane.
And Diane is writing checks, and it's going around, and she's creating her business. It's circulating out there. Okay. She's going to pay me off. Okay? So she pays, every time she sends me, just let's talk about the principal. I've only given her the principal of the loan, the $100,000. Of course, I expect interest back.
Of course. You know that. Okay. It's the American way.
Yeah, yes. Okay. And remember what Stephen Kellogg learned about interest, concentrating the wealth. Okay, so whenever Diane pays me back the principal, I go to my accounting books and I erase that money off of it. The money no longer exists. Money as bank credit. It's gone. The money supply has now shrunk $100,000. It's called bank credit. Many, many people in authority in this country, since the birth of the country, have never known about bank credit, but it has existed in this country since day one of the Constitution, because the Secretary of the Treasury, the first Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, who was a big supporter of private banks, very big supporter, in fact, he was responsible for the creation of a private bank in 1784, one of the first ones chartered by the state of New York, called the Bank of New York, which we still have, Boney, mm-hmm. Bank of New York. He's a very big proponent of private banking, because he knew about this thing called bank credit, right? Very, very, the founding fathers didn't have his background. And there were other people involved in the creation of our country that knew about bank credit and were his friends and whatever. So there was always, in the history of this country, a struggle between the control of our money by private interests versus public. And you could go back and read, Thomas Jefferson knew and he didn't want private banks involved in the financial part of the nation.
Wasn't Hamilton also...
Wait. Can you write down your questions and stuff?
Okay, like that? I'll talk to you after going. The presentation. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So this who's going to control the money is so critical. And Hamilton knew bank credit. But you get up to this Civil War, and you have Lincoln and... He had his Secretary of the Treasury, Salmon P. Chase. Salmon P. Chase didn't really know about bank credit. It existed. It was being used by the banks. But it wasn't something that was in the banking textbooks, you know? But you can go. I have a quote in here from Alexander Hamilton describing it perfectly in his first report to the U.S. Congress. He knew totally all about it, you know? But it's usually not spoken about. You know, they don't want people to know because it's really a manipulation. But because of the Federal Reserve Law of 1913, it's now legal. This is our system, bank credit. Okay? So it gets created when a loan document is signed, as the principal is paid off, the money is extinguished, and then you can see how we can have inflation, an increase in the money supply, and a deflation under the control of the private banking system. They are controlling the volume of our circulating money. Okay?
You may I think that works to speak right up a little bit, Sue. We have about 10 minutes left.
That's okay.
I think you can really speed up a bit.
Well, this is the most important part. Did I go back? Okay. So we said, this is not what happens. You know, the depositor's money is not loaned out. No. Not at all. It's the exact opposite. When a loan is created, it creates the new deposit in the checking account. The money supply is increased. And so we have our coins minted by the U.S. Treasury and actually spent by our government for us, right? They get to spend the money, right, that they create an issue. It's only 3%,
you know. And we have, included in that 3%, the bills, the currency bills, you know, Federal Reserve bills. And around 10 years ago, even the private banks took that away from us. Because today, the U.S. printing office, which is our government printing office, prints them, but sells them at cost to the private Federal Reserve. They couldn't even leave us the bills to spend for us ourselves. So now the printing office, government printing office, sells them to the private Federal Reserve banks at cost, and they spend them. Okay. And of course, 97% of the checking deposits, which, think about it, created by loans from private banks at interest, all of our money supply, we are paying, we, the public, are paying interest to private corporations to have money. Is that the most ridiculous thing? What's his name? I mean, there's so many quotes out there, but the easiest one for me to remember is Henry Ford. He knew this. He knew about bank credit. And he said, if the American people knew how the money system worked, there would be a revolution by morning. But think of it. That's why they don't talk about it. If people knew, what, we're paying interest to the bank for to have money? You know, the money, the history of the world, money was issued debt-free by the sovereign. It's a necessity of the society. It's a public function. Okay. Don't get me going. And here's this is the system we have today. It's all legal. This is all legal. To change it, we change the law. Okay? You have 12 Federal Reserve banks. They are the bankers for the private commercial banks. Okay? So any account in a Federal Reserve Bank is an account only of the bank. It's not our money. It's not what I'm talking about, the money supply. It's the bank's money. They only use it between each other to clear checks. That's all it's used for. Okay. Down here are the banks we're dealing with, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, UBS, HSBC, Deutsche Bank. There's a lot of foreign banks that opened branches here in New York and joined the powerhouse, the core powerhouse where the real decisions are made at the New York Federal Reserve Bank. New York has always been the banking center of this country from the very beginning, always. The New York banks were always the biggest. They were the ones with the most checking accounts, right? You might have a country bank that didn't have much bank credit that it could give. They had a lot of cash and currency. But where that accounting money always was in these big New York banks. And that's why those were the banks in the last half of the 19th century that funded with huge loans all of the beginning monopolization of the industries in our country. Remember, that's where they all started, back in the 1880s and 1890s. Well, they needed money to become those monopolies. And they got it from those large private banks giving them huge loans from New York City. The New York Bank was Rockefeller's bank. It was Rockefeller's bank. And Citibank was National City Bank. Was Rockefeller's bank, and there was another one which was J.P. Morgan's, and now J.P. Morgan Chase. So it started, this system started a long time. It's always been around. Okay, what are the effects of the current monetary system? Okay, we've talked about this. How under the control of who gives loans, right, by the private banks, can increase the money supply or decrease it. Cause inflation, affects all of us, but when they cause deflation, like the Great Depression of the 30s, and the farmers were dealing with what was called the Long Depression in the last half of the 19th century, the money supply is being decreased. And people are unemployed, and you have incredible misery. Okay. Causes grief, fear, it causes death. If you don't have money and you don't get the health care you need, you die. You die much sooner. Interest concentrates wealth. We talked about that. our government. There's no reason for our government to be in debt. There's absolutely no reason. In our Constitution, and it's still there, is the sovereign right of our Congress to issue the money. It's there. It's, you know, it's not being used. We have in this country a long history of publicly issued debt-free, interest-free money. Not debt, bank credit, but money. And like I said, there's been historically a fight for that control. And Lincoln issued the greenback during the Civil War, which was issued by the U.S. Treasury debt-free. He issued $450 million of it. It circulated around. 4 days after that law passed, the bankers met, bankers from Philadelphia, New York, and I forget the other city. They fought that like the devil, because that was an example to the American people of here's money that you're not paying interest on, right? That's issued by an authority that we have some input into, right? They issued the greenback way into the 20th century, and then they stopped issuing it. But so the bankers couldn't get rid of it. They couldn't. They injured it, and there's a lot of detail about how they did that through the laws they passed in Congress. But they couldn't get rid of it, okay? And we're lucky in this country, because we have really a long history of that struggle being very public and actually having publicly issued notes. And the countries in Europe don't have that history to fall back on. We do have that history to fall back on. It's there, okay? Who gives the loans? Who decides who gets the loans gets the money, right? And what are the loans being given for, right? Hedge funds, derivative traders, not the real economy, right? Yeah. So it's under their control, the private control. And if you give the loans, you get the power, right? So we have media concentration, right? We're not getting this information through the media, right? We have lobbyists, they're getting the money. Big farmers getting the money. See, it all goes back to who controls the money. That's the key. The key to a society. And here everybody is in debt. I mean, poor students. Well, you work with them. It's a horror. Horror what has been done to that generation. I don't have words to express. There really has to be some getting together and changing that law. It was a law, you know. These money powers, they want to control the law. They lobby. The lobbyists write the law to do that to our younger generation, and that law has to be changed. I mean, even the ruler of Babylonia, he saw the debt slaves that were being created because they had interest on their money in Babylonia, and it caused debt slavery. And after every 50 years, they'd have a debt jubilee in Babylonia, and he'd wipe out all the debt. I mean, we have to be that human here today. You know, they were that human back in Babylonia, you know. And I just want to show you, this is the monetary, this is what I did yesterday with that group. Okay.
So if we sign up, could you send us copies of your PowerPoint presentation?
Oh, that's fine. Write very clearly.
I can post it.
No, we can post it.
And I will send you a bibliography, okay. And I'll send you my home phone, and you can call me with questions. This is what I do, you know, all the time. I just want to tell you about one solution, okay? You have to change the money system, you have to change the law. It's all legal, right? Money is defined in law. In 2011 and 2012, representative in Congress, Dennis Kucinich, put together a bill to change the law. And because he did that, very brave man. When you know the history of this struggle, he's a very brave man. When he did that, they redistricted him out of Congress. That's how they got rid of him. Because they couldn't stand this being in Congress. He's very brave. He put this in Congress and he said, I'm putting it there. He didn't think it would, you know, pass. It was, but he said, it's to educate the American people. Mm-hmm. And it's a very well-written law. Like, people could read it and understand it. Not like the crap they usually give us, you know. It has three parts. The Federal Reserve banks, which now are owned totally by the private commercial bank members, okay? The government would buy all the shares from Citibank and Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, buy all the shares, and would actually own those banks. That's where the money is, right? Would actually own them, okay? Number two, the privilege to create money is going to be taken away from the private commercial bank. So what does that mean? It means that now a bank would have to take the depositor's money and loan it out. They couldn't create money anymore. And unfortunately, they might have to have a little less profit. Feel very bad for them, you know. They'd just be, you know, ordinary banks. They wouldn't have to be bailed out, right? Okay. And I've worked in systems all my life. To do this, remember, because all the money is 97% accounting in the records of the bank, it's a simple accounting change. You go in and you change, you write up the specs for the programmers, and you say, okay, instead of this money doing this, this money does that. And that's it. And for you, the public, there's no change. You still have your money in your checking account. But it's who's controlling that money that changes. And that the U.S. money would be spent, this was really proposed by Dennis as a jobs bill. Jobs. We need jobs, right? Let's stop sending them across the seas and give them to our young people. And so this, now that the money would be issued directly by the government, it would be issued for things that would create jobs here, like the repairing
the bridges, roads,
the roads.
Things of that. Mm-hmm.
We have so much, you know. Education. Think of it. Oh, and I just want to say, and education made me think of it, publicly issued money from, during the Depression, worldwide Depression, in Canada, in 1935, the Bank of Canada was created, privately owned bank, right? There were money reformers up there, very smart people, who convinced the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister of Canada in 1938, Mackenzie King, to nationalize the bank. So the Canadian government bought, just like Dennis would like, all the shares of the Bank of Canada. It was now owned by Canada. And it was the only one from 1938 to 1974. It was the only bank that issued real money, debt-free, interest-free, for the people of Canada. And that's when they got their educational system, and that's when they got their health care system, in that period. And this is a whole country that did it. Today, I have friends in Canada, they're not taught that. They don't know that history. You know, money is not supposed to be understood or talked about. You know, you're just supposed to be that fish in the fishbowl and the water's all around.
Is Canada no longer owns their Federal Reserve Bank?
They still own it, but what happened was, and I don't know the details, I just know, I know some Canadian reformers. In 1974, the IMF came into Canada, and they changed the system. And so slowly, the government of Canada stopped issuing the money, and slowly they brought back the bank credit. Mm-hmm. And now, 97% of Canadian money is bank credit issued mm-hmm. from loans from private commercial banks.
Right.
Yeah. No. But think of that. A whole country did that for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can talk to people about and say, this is not impossible. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, look at this, the whole country did it.
Now, would the Ron Paul solution, that is to remonetize a certain commodity, that is gold, would
right,
that be
of any
help?
His solution is to use gold.
Would it limit the ability of banks to balloon?
You know, the gold standard, I think, is it's sort of something that the bankers always waved in front of the people. Oh, we have this gold standard. It makes, you know, money solid. Meanwhile, they were creating all the bank credit underneath. So to me, it's not real. It's something to blind people to what is really going on. With what money, see, money is an invention. It's not a commodity. It's an invention, the means of exchange. Thank you very much.
Are you going to post the whole? Because I understand we only got part of it. Are you going to post the whole?
We can put that. It on the PEF website, right?
Yes.
Big PEF or small PEF? 194.
Which one matters?
I just want to know where I can go to get it. That's all I want to know.
You can get it from us.
Okay.
The small one?
Big PEF wouldn't put it up.
Are there any questions? I didn't want to.
I have some.
Pretty
so
sure.
Now I have a better idea. So when they're,
maybe I'm wrong.
When they're contracting the money supply, it's the bank
I'd love to
who
be
basically stops issuing loans.
Yes.
They
and they call in loans. They called in the loans.
Okay.
And the
thank
loans they called in were the loans that people had taken out to buy stocks in the stock market. So if they had to pay off their loan, and the bank is saying, I need you to pay off your loan, well, they had to go sell their stock, and we had to stop the market crash.
Okay, so when then when we had the recession here, and the government gave money to states, supposedly for infrastructure and to build roads, though I didn't see that. What is that called?
No, the government borrowed money.
Oh, is it? From those reserve banks?
Our government doesn't issue money. The banks issue the money. The government borrows from those private banks.
To pay them for the privilege of using their own money.
It's so.
Yeah.
They don't want you to know this.
This is bad.
But we have a long history of publicly issued money in this country. We have to get that history out.
Yes, we do. We need to get the history out and say we need to go back to it.
Because
private people are screwing it up.
And we're really lucky to have the history, like I said. European countries don't have that history of publicly issued money. That's, you know, in the colonies wouldn't allow private banks. They knew about private banks.
What happened, yeah.
So they ended up creating money that the colonial legislatures sent, you know, created, paper money. They called it bills of credit.
But
that was the money in the colonies because there wasn't enough gold and silver. The gold and silver went back to England to pay for colonial taxes.
Yeah, but that was the tax on the colonists. But then also, getting back to that, wasn't also Hamilton, wasn't he a supporter also of states' rights and not necessarily a central government?
You know, you have to be really careful because people will divert you with all these issues.
No, wasn't he supporter?
He doesn't want, because Alexander Hamilton doesn't want you to know about bank credit. He will say 10 different things to divert you.
No, but I'm wondering if that was the reason of it, because he thought if they had a central government, and he was probably wanting to avoid that central control of the money, which is how he fought for state rights to keep control as a what you call that
diversion,
so they could have the private banks to control the money.
It was actually the other way around. Thomas Jefferson was the states' rights person, and Hamilton was the one that was supported the central bank.
Central government.
I thought it was wasn't it Hamilton that got in the duel with Aaron Burr and killed him?
I just have to show you this great quote.
Oh, Hamilton. Okay, then you're right. I do got it wrong. It was Burr who was in favor of states' rights.
Well, Jefferson actually, but Burr was not against
him. No. But I knew it was the guy who got killed. Okay,
this,
so Hamilton died.
I came across this in the New York Public Library. They have all the old congressional reports, and I came across this. This is Alexander Hamilton, 1791, in a report to Congress. Now listen to this. This is every loan which a bank makes is, in the first shape, a credit given to the borrower on its books, the amount of which it stands ready to pay, either in its own notes, bank notes, or in its gold or silver, But in a great number of cases, no actual payment is made in gold and silver, right? The borrower, frequently by a check or order, transfers his credit to some other person to whom he has a payment to make, who in his turn is often content with a similar, you know, check, right? And in this manner, the credit keeps circulating, performing in every stage the office of money.
Right.
He knew it.
Yeah,
he knew
right.
it. He wasn't going to.
And that's
really.
The base. That's the basis.
Is that
of
part of the
the fractioning?
He knew that was the basis of the power of the bank.
Right. And what's that called? Where they have a fraction of the value in their
Fractional reserve bank.
Fractional reserve. And that's where it came from.
Yeah.
You never because if everybody called in all their, or if everybody went in to withdraw their deposits, it would put them out. You know, they'd be they'd be bankrupt.
Yes,
literally.
And today they still have fractional reserve banking. And they still have it.
Some of the big issues. Yeah.
One of my friends is a regulator of a national bank. You know, the national banks are the Federal Reserve banks, and he said, a bank today. And he's a regulator. He goes in. He looks at their books. He's following the law. He said, banking today, they can make whatever loan they want. They have a month to go and find
the money,
the reserves. A month.
Right.
So they'll make
it's a license to make a profit for doing nothing.
Exactly.
Thank you, Sue.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Also, so sign up and I'll send a bibliography. And
either that or I can just post it if you want to send it to me.
To us.
Yeah. Okay, you can get it first, but we don't have to sign up?
Yeah. No, you don't.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Very good, very good. Thank you.
Glad
you got to come back and do more, take up where you left off here. It's very good. I'd like to learn more.
It helps to go into a piece of history and see all of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what I did with the farm.
Thanks, everyone.
Carter.
I have 1 hour left.
Okay.
So we need to.
Sorry, what's your name?
So I was thinking we would just go to the deli across the street
what's
and
your last name?
Get something.
Nice to meet you, Natalie.
Do you care?
Where are you?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be close. Yeah.
Okay.
The deli is inside.
Yeah.
Inside
New York deli.
Okay.
Right across Swan Street. Or, okay. Yeah.